Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
So the Media Project is underway, your opportunity for a half hour of commentary, analysis, and I always say, if we're lucky, a little bit of insight maybe into the media issues of the week. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union in Albany. We've got a remarkable show here because we're missing a couple of voices. One very notable, of course, just because of the holiday season that is upon us. But we have terrific guests here. Judy Patrick, editor of the Daily Gazette in Schenectady. Judy, hello.
Hello. I am sitting in Alan's chair.
And sitting in Alan's chair. Where is that guy?
Not here.
And we have Paul Conte, longtime television news director and now professor at the College of St. Rose, sir.
Howdy.
Howdy. I'm the guy from out west. Is that worth it?
Yeah, but howdy doesn't characterize the day part, so.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's exactly day part being one of those broadcast terms.
Yeah, sorry.
That's good. It does not characterize the day part, folks. You just get that little word there. You know, one of the interesting things amid the tragedies of breaking news that we cover regularly, most recently, the shootings in California, the method that people are using nowadays to cover breaking news is interesting. And one of the notable aspects of the coverage of the San Bernardino shooting was the extent to which local media relied upon social media, relied upon crowdsourcing, upon what they were picking up from people. This is a mode of delivering content that really changes the dynamic. Might be worth just talking about that a little bit, about how you, although for Paul, for you, this is not so different, because breaking news in the newspaper world, which Judy and I represent, this is something new for us, going in effect live. This is the kind of thing that you've always had to do.
Right. And there's an inherent risk, and that is that you don't have the opportunity to study, deliberate, or place context on anything. And when you're starting to use user-generated content, as the internet term is applied, it's hard to know the veracity and the source. From what I've seen of that content so far in the coverage, as of the moment of this recording, it appears to be legitimate content. But you know as well as I do, there are plenty of instances where people have been embarrassed to discover something that they reported or some content that they used had been manufactured. During Hurricane Sandy in particular, there were egregious examples of content that was being fabricated, both written and visual, sharks swimming in subway stations, things like that, that were Photoshop. And people later pulled them apart and showed the original shark in the subway, blah, 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 and the combined through Photoshop. But I think the bonus in terms of the veracity of the content is that it was unfolding so fast, people didn't have time to disturb it and to manufacture it yet.
Hmm.
But that will happen. Mm-hmm. By this afternoon, there'll be manufactured content.
Right.
Guarantee it.
Right.
You know, as a news consumer yesterday, I was so desperate to find out what was happening as quickly as I could. So I was checking out Facebook and Twitter, and I was getting some content there, but I was kind of disappointed with the Twitter feeds that I was seeing, because I wasn't getting good content. And I found myself more and more, I hate to sound parochial, but I would go to the newspaper or a legitimate news source and say, okay, now I know that's really true.
The newspaper of that community.
Right. I'd go to the LA Times, or I go to papers out there.
The smaller papers from what's called the Los Angeles News Group, which is owned by the same organization that owns the papers that Ira Fussfeld, who's regularly here, represents, Digital First Media, the Kingston, Troy, Saratoga. That company owns the newspapers that serve that community. And I don't think that's parochial of you. I think that's sensible that they are now employing some of the great breaking news techniques that you're looking for.
Right. I wanted something that I could rely on, something I could believe in. I didn't want all the chatter, I think, is what I wanted to sift away. I'd go, there was some great video coverage and that was spellbinding, watching, you know, people stand around a car, see mm-hmm. what was going to happen. After a while, that gets a little boring. But the real hard news, what's actually going to go on, I have to rely on the traditional news media.
Because you know that there is somebody, at least there's a funnel there. There's somebody making a judgment as to what is worth putting out into their brand. Not that there aren't mistakes made by regular news organizations, but that at least there is an effort to what we call the journalism of verification. There's an effort to verify rather than simply pass along rumor. I think that is different. And one of the things, I know this sounds really basic for somebody like with your experience, Paul, that don't report what you don't know.
Right. You know? Well, yeah. Well, this unfolded during a class I was teaching, a graduate class that goes on for 3 hours. And we spent a good deal of time actually monitoring coverage. And one of the things we were talking about was sourcing and how people were saying automatically, you got to have two sources. You got to have two sources. I said, well, two sources isn't really the only
right.
the only rule you can apply, because if the two sources are from the same office, one can confirm the other rumor, and you could still end up with, well, Gabby Giffords. Mm-hmm. She was killed because the source that was originally used to report her as dead was from the same office as the other source. And then we started to discover, you got to have two sources from two different places. They can't be from the sheriff's office and the sheriff's office. But an experienced journalist will know that.
Yes.
And that's where filtering, and that's, yeah, we are gatekeepers. Okay. Bad us, we're gatekeeping. But we're gatekeeping with a conscience if we're serious about the profession and the craft. And I know that the three people in the room here are.
So. Yeah. Yeah, you know, it is interesting, that notion that the two-source rule, which has become part of the journalism myth of America as a result of Watergate, really. That
right.
was supposedly the rule at the Washington Post during the investigation. And you talked to Bob Woodward about that, and he will say, no, we said two sources. We wanted two independent sources on things just to back up to make sure that one of them wasn't lying to us. But he said one great source can be what you need. I remember being beaten on a story back in the old days when I was, before we had digital reporting for newspapers, walking when I was a reporter for Newsday, the Long Island paper, finding the New York Times on the news rack in front of the Capitol and just kicking myself because here they had beaten me on a story that was really important to me because it involved Long Island, which I was supposedly covering, which I was supposedly covering, which I was supposed to be on top of, is what I was trying to say. And there was no attribution in the lead. It was something that Governor Mario Cuomo had done, no attribution. And I realized when I read that, that with an unnamed source, with a front page story, clearly their source had to be the governor himself, saying what the governor himself was thinking. There you've got a single source who is clearly authoritative, right?
Credible.
Not that single sources don't make mistakes. We're reminded of the coal mine accident in West Virginia some years ago where the governor announced the deaths of a certain number of people, and then the media were criticized when it found out that these miners were not in fact dead. They were trapped. But the source who stood in front of the cameras and announced it was the governor of West Virginia. So what can you do? Sometimes even authoritative sources are wrong.
Yeah, and I think that happened really late at night, so it got printed on a lot of the front pages of newspapers across the country.
Yeah.
Another bad thing.
Yes, printing bad front pages. You remember the presidential election of 2000. As the night went along, we changed the front page four times.
Right.
We eventually got it right accidentally because we said Bush won. You know, just take a stab at it, whatever.
One of them's got to be right.
Yeah, the other thing I saw a lot of during the coverage of the San Bernardino shooting was the pressure on cable news live coverage is to fill that space. And
right.
they do need to rely on speculation. I think they try to temper it somewhat. And the other thing that they rely on are people phoning in with reports. And that I'm always worried that they're going to go into the ba-ba-boo. You know, it's a prank call. I think they do a better job nowadays of screening
that,
those
yeah.
things. But there was quite a bit of that as they tried to fill the news vacuum last night.
The Baba Booey?
That's a Howard Stern thing. Howard Stern thing. His listeners call in and they, they goad you into thinking it's a call. And then in the middle of the conversation, they just say, Baba Booey.
I'm showing my Howard Stern. Yeah,
okay, I just thought that maybe that
if
was...
If you invite phone calls today, maybe you may have some WAMC listeners. Northeast Public Radio.
I'm sorry that I missed that. I thought that was like a term of art that I lost. Like,
it is sort of art.
You know, we have a term at the Times Union we call Tagali Martha, because I used to say I wanted to have a story in the front page that would make your prototypical notion of this guy sitting there in his t-shirt in the morning eating his post toasties, and he says to his wife as he looks at the paper, golly Martha, listen to this.
And his name was Clark, and he had a son named
Sorry. Golly Martha. So this is the media project from Northeast Public Radio in Albany. We have Judy Patrick of the Daily Gazette and good old Paul. Paul Conti from the College of St. Rose, and I'm Rex Smith of the Times Union. You know, I just stumbled there because I remember when you left one job, you were replaced by another Paul. And your phone number still came up on my electronic devices as Paul at WNYT. So,
well, yeah.
Very handy.
That was actually a job requirement after I left, just to make it easier on the staff for the transition.
Very good.
There for a long
Terrific.
Time. Take them a while to say somebody else's name.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a good thing. So we can't get into this program too far without talking about Donald Trump, because, you know, we have, since our last conversation, we have had the episode of Donald Trump allegedly mimicking the disabled reporter for the New York Times, Serge Kovalevsky, and this being then Trump saying, no, you're getting it wrong. This is the media taking issue with me, his campaign manager asserting that Trump didn't know who he was. I guess the question comes to mind, at what point do we step out of character as independent journalists and just blow the whistle and say, this guy is lying? Or is that really inappropriate when you consider the fact that he is the front runner for the Republican nomination?
You know, I don't think his supporters really even care if he's lying at this point. They seem to think that all politicians lie, and he's just doing what everybody else is doing, and he's appealing to them on some other level. And from my perspective on that incident, it's his whole demeanor in making fun of any kind of person. Even the characterization was wrong. It just speaks to his moral character in a way that you would think would resonate with more of his supporters or with America in general, but it didn't. But I think that people are recognizing the lies. They just don't care.
Yeah, I don't know if as a journalist you can write that somebody is lying. I think, you know, from a video journalist standpoint, I would present video of Trump doing what he did and present video of the journalist, and people can make their own judgment on that and decide whether or not a lie has been told. But I don't know that we have to use that word. Since it calls for a decision, people are capable of doing that. But so, I mean, maybe that's just splitting hairs, because doesn't everybody run a fact check thing on everybody after they debate?
Yes,
which is really truth telling.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just they're calling it fact check, but it's, are they telling the truth?
You know, we do these stories where we present one fact and we present the other fact or the dissenting point of view. But I'm not sure whether people, you know, they stop reading when they read what they want to read and they don't even bother to go to the second piece of it. Like, you've got to really trust that the audience is engaged and caring about ferreting out both. But if they're just looking for one side, they're going to stop at that one side.
Mm-hmm. With confirmation bias, as the sociologists call it, the something that affirms what they believe already, or they see in what they believe. They see something that they believe affirms what they're doing. In fact, there have been some studies that show that people, when confronted with evidence that contradicts their presuppositions, become even more determined that what they believe is true. That's why some of the fact-checking seems not to have an effect on people, because it only makes people more sure that what they were told by their beloved candidate is more true, because this person is under assault and therefore we have to stand with him with our beliefs. It gives you, really gives you pause to think about whether you have any impact at all on people.
And it makes us, what can we do to make the news media be more credible with the public, because apparently they don't trust us.
Mm-hmm. You know, the tolerance for misstatements seems highest among the supporters of Donald Trump and Ben Carson, for example. And that could be in part because these are candidates who are feeding upon that mistrust. That is, the fundamental of their candidacy is not a belief that government can do something. It is rather the mistrust of government, the hatred of government, and the hatred of all things establishment, of the media as well. And so it could be that those supporters have a higher tolerance, let's say, for misstatement than, say, a supporter of Jeb Bush or Hillary Clinton. A slight misstatement on the part of Hillary Clinton would be magnified because you expect a level of factual statement from her.
You know, I hear people argue that people don't trust news media, and perhaps they don't. But I find that sometimes when you look at data like that and you start to examine the data points themselves, it doesn't really tell the whole story. I'm going to guess, and you both would know more than I would, that your newsstand circulation figures are up today, that more people are buying the paper today.
As a result of breaking news.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Which would tend to suggest that people still rely on mainstream media for truth-telling. And what I think people mean when they say they don't trust media is you get grouped together with a whole lot of other types of people that convey information. There's the entertainment press, and some of their objectives are clearly different than your objectives. And there are other news organizations which are run by companies which have different philosophical approaches, which sometimes color their reporting. And that all gets grouped into, you know, it's like people, I hate Congress, but they keep electing the same representative mm-hmm. from their district. So, you know, here's one truth that I know that doesn't have anything to do with journalism, but I used to get data all the time that we would look at. We do these quantifications. What kinds of stories are people interested in? And one of them would come back all the time is crime. People are interested in crime stories. So the knee jerk is go out and cover more news about people's break-ins and robberies and assaults and whatnot. It's not really what they were telling you. What they were really telling you, if you sat them down and asked them about that in other long-form discussions, they're worried about personal safety, which is different than I want crime news.
Uh-huh. In fact, reporting every crime might contribute to a lack of a feeling of personal safety. You
right.
might actually be making them more unhappy.
So I have never had a discussion with people about what they mean when they say, I don't trust the news media. But I suspect that if you did, some of the things that I said about the entertainment press and other press with objectives might percolate out. But, you know, there it is. If you look at the ratings, they're not using overnight ratings the way they used to anymore. But if you look at the overnight ratings for cable news, they're going to be up. Your newspaper sales are going to be up. There's big news. People went there first for information.
You wonder if that's going to hold in generations to come. If generations to come who have not grown up with any sort of attachment to legacy media will still look for those brands, or if it will make a difference.
Well, nobody asked me to change what I was doing last night. I mean, they're in their late 20s. They're not undergraduates. They're graduate students. But we were watching NBC's live coverage just because I go home. Like Swallows to Capistrano, I go home from where I came. And nobody asked me to change or look elsewhere for it. It was compelling coverage. Pete Williams and Lester Holt did a great job yesterday afternoon and evening. So that's where it stayed. And nobody said they wanted to check Twitter or Facebook or something else.
Mm-hmm. The phenomenon of the second screen, you wonder how often that is actually happening, how often people are holding on to their tablet while they're also watching television and getting access to additional information.
Sure. I was watching cable TV, and I had the newspapers on my phone in my hand. It's nice to hear what Paul has to say about people still trusting mainstream media. But, you know, I still get those calls from people who do not trust the Associated Press, who I will defend as an unbiased. But they're hearing from, I think, radio shows like Rush Limbaugh that you can't always trust everything you read in the Associated Press.
Well, and on the far right of the Republican Party, now you can't trust Rush Limbaugh because he's too much the establishment conservative, you know. So The world is becoming more extreme, as we say.
Well, as you get to the opposite ends of the political spectrum, it doesn't tend to bend back around.
Yeah.
it's not so much a line as it is a long, oval.
The arc. Yeah, actually, I got an email day before yesterday from a guy saying, I can prove that the Times Union has been lying to me. And he had a whole bunch of links to extreme right-wing websites, Breitbart and so on. And this is how he could prove, because these people were telling him the truth, because it confirmed his fundamental bias. I think we need to have psychiatrists in the newsroom, to probe the subconscious of our customers, and
or at least take those calls.
Yeah, that would be very nice. Judy Patrick from the Daily Gazette and Paul Conti from the College of St. Rose. I'm Rex Smith in the Times Union with this week's Media Project. If you want to offer your thoughts, media@wamc.org. Media@wamc.org is our email address. We might just make note of one interesting development, because we've been trying, those of us in the newspaper business have been trying to figure out how are we going to sustain this as we have fewer inserts going into our papers that have been tremendous sources of revenue, less advertising because there is more inventory available to advertise elsewhere. That is, you can advertise on the internet in a million different places. The San Francisco Chronicle, actually a sister paper of the Times Union and the Hearst Corporation, is finally profitable. It used to lose $1 million a week. But one of the ways that they are growing their business is they have created a digital ad agency. So the hope is that this outfit will channel money back in and support journalism. It's an interesting notion, because an ad agency or a PR agency is kind of contrary in a way to what we have always seen as our mission as newspapers, which is digging out the truth no matter what smoke screens or ads might be thrown up in our face. But, if it's channeling money into the organization so you can hire reporters, hey.
That's the editor speaking, because we're all doing that. We're trying to find other sources of revenue to supplement or to subsidize the newsroom operation. I think that's what's underneath all of this. We do the events, which we think also kind of serves a public service. Public relations is something different, but there is some skill there, I bet. But I would imagine it's in another room, or there is a wall up there in some
mm-hmm.
way.
Yeah, at least a wall, maybe a floor even. So finally today, the Washington Post has made a style announcement. We get all bungled up on style in this business, but this is a non-binary gender identifier. By that, I mean to say that instead of Mrs., which identifies a woman who is married, the Times is now allowing Mix, MX point, mm-hmm. Which is neither Mr. nor Ms. nor
Mrs. Or Miss.
And the Washington Post is now saying that you hope to avoid using he or she for someone who wishes not to have a binary gender identification. They're now allowing they as a singular pronoun. Is this the end of grammar as we know it?
I think there are purists out there that will talk about this at length, but I think it's okay to use to reflect the people's language, and you can't do somersaults around a piece of writing to try to avoid a pronoun. I think you've got to come up with some reasonable solution that people will understand.
But as I read that, why wouldn't you just use the person's name
over and over?
Sure. First time you use the full name, second time you use the last name.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are times when a pronoun is a handy thing.
Well, yes.
or possessive, like her dress.
Yeah, I get that part.
Their dress. Hmm.
Right. Okay. Well, we have 7 seconds left.
So let us hear from the language experts on this, folks. Thanks for joining us in the Media Project. Paul Conti, Judy Patrick, and Rex Smith. See you next week, and maybe we'll even have the professor back.
Hmm? Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage, ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Now publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.